barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20. 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here, then. Okay, see ya.
It is Wednesday, September 21st. Welcome to Menace to Sports. I am Zach Smith, your host, with my co-host, Chris Drew.
I'm here.
Happy Wednesday. It is a hump day, if you didn't know. If you're not in the Menace Degenerate chat, you don't know. But in the Degenerate chat, you know it's hump day already. You got a nice wake up to some humps. anyways, moving on. It is officially conference season, Chris.
Okay.
We can finally move past the nonsense that are the first 3 weeks. Although they were a chaotic and fun 3 weeks, it is officially conference season. These teams are now entering week four, which is a different.
My bad. I did not mean to put that up there. I was just trying to move my mouth.
Let's put it up there. People want to know how deep Chris's fetish for Lola Bunny is. If you're in our general group chat, oh my God, they are destroying Chris, sending pictures of Lola Bunny. There was the conversation. Here's a great conversation for the chat. Who was hotter, Jessica Rabbit or Lola Bunny? And get over the bestiality side. I know it's a bunny, but that's a sexy ass bunny, if we're being honest. Who's hotter, Jessica Rabbit or Lola Bunny? Because people were questioning Chris's affection, I guess, for Lola Bunny in the group chat, Chris.
And I was just trying to talk recruiting. And for the recruiting nerds, the Menace chat is absolutely bumping with recruiting news. And obviously, it's a nice little bridge gap between the two Chris's Corners episodes. Let me just plug that.
Chris's Corners Patreon episode dropped yesterday. If you didn't catch it, it was a good one. Recruiting-centric
Recruiting show. Nuggets.
Nuggets everywhere.
Mm-hmm. But all right, Zach. You ready? It's a nice little Wednesday show. We got a lot to talk about. We're going to be going through. But I want to start off with a check-in, Zach, because it's week four.
Well, I want to tell a story first, Chris, that I just told you before the show. I'm pretty transparent in things I do. I've been fucked up for the last 24 hours. Not like fucked up, but like ran a very random. But a guy that Justine and I know killed himself yesterday. And very odd interaction. Like I wasn't a fan of his. He was kind of a douchebag when we hung out. He was like abrasive and was talking shit to me, although I didn't know him. This is years ago, and he married a girl that we know. And he sent me a random message 4 days ago, like saying he read an article about me and was sorry that I went through that. And he's going through something similar. And I just discarded it. Because I was like, this guy, we're not even friends. Like, he talks shit to me the only time I've ever met him. Like, why is he reaching out? And I just found out yesterday he killed himself, and I'm kind of fucked up about it. Like, I should have responded. I don't know, man. I'm not in a good place because of it. It's fucking with me. And yeah. I know I didn't do anything wrong. I mean, the guy was an asshole to me the only time I've ever met him. So like, why would I respond? But I don't know. I just feel bad. I mean, he reached out to me of all people. I guess because I went through some shit and I feel like I dropped the ball. So kind of in a bad place right now.
No, I mean, there's no book or guide how to handle that kind of thing. And like the human emotion element, like fan of someone or not, it's always tough.
Yeah.
When a life is lost that has touched your life or been connected with you. So yeah, everybody, I mean, Rod Favre's right. Everybody's dealing with something. And just an important reminder. You cannot kind of live on this. I could have done this. I should have done this. But what we can do in the immediate future is to check on the people around us. And that's obviously
no doubt. And it's just a fuck. I don't know. Just it's fucked up because we weren't friends. Like I actually didn't like the guy. I mean, I think he was a complete. I mean, he was obviously dealing with a lot of shit. But but even in that scenario, you feel just fucking terrible.
Yeah. Just like how important the human life is. Like obviously, like this has kind of affected you, and I'm sure many others that may have known him well and maybe didn't know him as well as they would have, just because, you know, life is important. So just check on your people.
And you know what? To support Ryan Day in his efforts, mental health is real, man. It really is. And just check on people, right? Check on people. Like, if you feel like something's off, like, act, right? It's a world where action is needed, right? In a world of in society where someone will get beat up. I mean, a guy in Columbus, I mean, got sucker punched and died not a couple days ago. And there's a bunch of people with cell phones taking videos instead of fucking intervening. Like we need to change, man. It's fucked up. But anyways, I don't want to take, you know, get away from the point of the show, but it's just, if I seem different, I'm in a awkward place, I guess.
Oh, you're good, coach. Thank you for being super transparent. Just kind of as we move topics, I didn't even know we were going to do this, but connected wise, we're running a space today with Troy Smith. I'm running it. And one of the things he wants to talk about is mental health, kind of when we're going through
that. Is right. There you go. We got to promote it. 3:30 today, Menace to Sports and Troy Smith, the GOAT, Heisman Trophy winner, 3:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We got a space going on Twitter. Make sure everyone is there and tell everybody we're going to make it the biggest space of the season and get a chance to ask a Heisman Trophy winner questions. What the fuck else could you want?
It's the best damn spaces, and we want the best damn fan base to be there and rocking out with us.
Absolutely.
All right, Zach, I do want to kind of move to the show and go a little bit to, you know, into some football. This is week three, obviously, or week four, excuse me, we're walking into. It's Wisconsin. It's like conference play is starting. You're 3-0. What is kind of the feeling around the Woody? What are the coaches doing? What are the coaches getting ready for? Do you generally feel like, okay, this is the true start of your season?
I mean, it is, right? Because you're moving into conference play, and this is the first time that a lot of these guys have went through conference play. That now they're knee deep in season, right? It's not preseason anymore, and you don't want to call the Notre Dame game preseason, but they had 9 months to prepare for Notre Dame, and now here we are. We're getting into conference play, Big Ten play for Ohio State, and everyone else. Everyone's going into their conference play, and this is the first time that Jim Knowles' defensive staff is going to attack the Big Ten, right? It's no longer Arkansas State and fucking Toledo. It's no longer a team that they prepared for 9 months. Now they're preparing for Wisconsin, who Jim Knowles might have watched in the offseason, but he certainly hasn't game planned for. And so it's a very, very different time for, I mean, really just the staff and every staff. I mean, things change week four because now you're knee deep in it. And it's time to move on. It's time to week game plan. Like, you got to think in week six, right? Ohio State is going to have an opponent. And when they show up to work on Sunday, having played a game on Saturday, that is the first time they're going to put on the film for that team. So now, as opposed to 9 months of preparation, they have 6 days of preparation. So it's a very different staff dynamic for that staff to only, like, I mean, it's accelerated. You don't feel as prepared. You feel like you need to stay at work late because you went from having 9 months to prepare for Notre Dame to having 6 days to prepare for Wisconsin. That being said, they have guys like Tim Hinton. They have these analysts that are working on Wisconsin all week of Arkansas State and Toledo. So that happens. When you play an inferior opponent, certain staff members will put all their focus on the big opponent coming up, right, for weeks. So you get a little bit of preparation. There's a little bit of extra prep. But for the most part, Ryan Day, Kevin Wilson, and Jim Knowles caught on film Sunday for the very first time at Wisconsin and said, "All right, what are we working with here? What do we have to attack?" And so it's going to be cool to see how this, specifically the defensive staff who've never worked together, how they're going to kind of adapt and adjust into this new phase of the season.
As a receivers coach, when you had to work with a new like offensive coordinator for the first time, that week three, how hard was that? How much did that feel rushed? Or was that kind of easy given that it was Ryan Day as kind of the new OC when you were going through some game planning?
I mean, you've got a decent staff cohesion by now because they the defensive staff has been together for 9 months. I mean, they figured out how they work together. They figured out the personalities, the strengths, the weaknesses. They figured all that out in the last 9 months, and so they have a good chemistry already. I mean, 9 months seems short in the big picture, but when you are working the hours that college football coaches work, that's 9 months is more like 2 years.
2 years. Yeah. It's like camp. It's like camp crush.
Yeah. Like your local business. It would take 2 years to build the cohesion that college football coaches build in 9 months, just by sheer time, by sheer hours. I mean, they travel on the road together. They go out to eat. They stay in hotels. They are in the office for 12, 14, 16 hour days. So they've worked together the equivalent of 2 years for the accountant or the ticket manager, right? 2 years of time has been scrunched into 9 months. So it's already done.
As a coach, kind of in this point, what kind of emphasis or what's different about entering conference play when you get through things?
Well, I mean, it matters now. Mm-hmm. I mean, because ultimately your goal, I mean, everyone has different goals, right? Ohio State certainly wants to win the Big Ten. Nothing that has happened matters towards that. They're 0-0 in the Big Ten, right? Beating Notre Dame doesn't mean shit. It does on the national landscape. But honestly, if they would have lost that game and won out, it wouldn't have mattered. So that Notre Dame game, as much as people have talked about it and Georgia beat Oregon, that shit doesn't really matter because that loss in week one would have been irrelevant. Exactly. If they run the table, no different than had Notre Dame not fucked up and lost to Marshall. If Notre Dame ran the table, they'd be probably in the playoffs or at least right there. So for Ohio State, for any team, the season starts this week. Like this is truly week one because anything you could want is on the table for most teams, right? There's very few teams with two losses that have a chance to win out. And so even the teams with one loss right now, everything is still right there. Just win and everything else will take care of itself.
I would say winning you're in, baby. Winning you're in. Zach, for the Big Ten in particular, is there like a difference in physicality in just preparing for the Big Ten? Like do coaches kind of structure practices to be a little bit easier to get ready for a beating? Or is that more of kind of as the season goes on, the practices scale back in terms of toughness?
No, I mean, practices scale back in the second half of season. And by scale back, I mean, we're talking maybe you don't do inside drill or maybe you take the shoulder pads off on the shoulder pads off on Wednesday. If you have a veteran team and that comes down to the makeup of your team, right? Where we had a veteran team in 2015 and we did that towards the end of the year. And that's not why we lost to Michigan State. Like that had nothing to do with it, but we did it. Urban decided to do that, take the shoulder pads off on Wednesday. As kind of a bone to throw to a veteran team, they were practicing hard as shit, preparing hard as shit, and there was no need to take those extra hits. The defense tackled well, extremely well. The offensive line blocked extremely well, and at that point, it was wear and tear was more of a threat than becoming soft or not blocking well. Now, I don't think Ohio State can do that. They're not going to be a team this year that second half of the year you can take the shoulder pads off, especially not after what happened against Michigan last year. But there are teams, there's makeups of some of these teams that they can afford to do that, and it's probably smart to do that.
Another question kind of regarding the makeup of things, Zach. At this point, do you know in your room who's going to be a contributor long-term for the season, like some of those freshmen or sophomores? Do you know by this point if they're going to be able to contribute and help out this year, or has that kind of already been known?
I didn't see one. I mean, I put out the breakdown. I'm just saying,
like for your own room, like when you went to this part of the season, it was like, oh, these kids can play, these kids aren't. We're pretty settled on who's going to play moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, they have a general idea right now. They have a general idea of who possibly could contribute this year. Like Caden Curry is one guy at Ohio State that is going to be a contributor late in the season, and he's already playing. Mm-hmm. Then you have guys like Kai Stokes, Sonny Styles. I watched them on film, the freshman towards the end of the Toledo game, and they're just not going to be ready. And they're actually fantastically talented, but they're not going to be ready to play this year. And that's okay. They could end up being first-round draft picks. That's happened countless times. But yeah, you know right now who has a chance of making an impact and playing.
Caden Curry is so interesting. Just because you brought him up, Zach, like how much do you worry about guys being quote unquote too small to play defensive end? Because he's like 6'2 right now, a shorter guy, or does it not matter if you're disruptive?
Listen, I watched that kid. He is a 4-6, A to B, high effort, high motor, talented kid. He's already strong. Just imagine how much stronger and explosive he's going to be in 2 years. I mean, 6'2, you'd like him to be 6'4, but it is what it is. There's 6'2 defensive ends that have thrived. It's not the end all be all. Now, if he's 5'10, yeah, that's kind of an issue. He's probably too small, but 6'2 is big enough if you possess that high motor and you have that explosive twitch to you.
At 6'2", does it make more sense for him to be like a stand-up, quote-unquote, Leo or Jack? Or like,
he's probably not going to be a five technique. And a five technique's a guy that if there's a tight end, he lines up on the tight end or inside the tight end. He's probably not going to be that because he's not long-levered enough to take on those double teams. But he could be an athletic, what they call a nine technique, which is outside of the tight end. Like, he's an edge defender, which is the same thing as a DN. But there's two here. And I got asked this question in our group chat on Patreon. What is the difference between a DN and an edge defender? The answer is nothing. I don't know who coined those terms, but an edge defender is simply someone who lines up on the edge, which is what a DN does. There's two different styles of defensive ends, though. There is a more athletic, I don't, whatever you want to call him. There's a D end who is your athletic wider defensive end, right? He will line up away from the tight end most of the time or outside the tight end if you don't want to flip him. And that is your, I don't know, it's Noah Spence of the world, right? It's a more like athletic
guy. Will Anderson would be an example of that.
Absolutely. Joey Bosa could play five. It's a guy that's not big enough and strong enough to take on double teams. And then you have your other defensive end that's more of a five technique. That's your guy that goes to the tight end. You say, this guy will beat the shit out of a tight end. 260-pound tight end has no chance against this defensive end, right? Because he's so big and so strong. But he also has to be athletic and explosive, because if there is no tight end, you want him to be a great pass rusher. So that five technique defensive end is more, it's a hybrid between the athletic freak defensive end and that defensive tackle, the big body that's also athletic. It's somewhere in between. It's a bigger guy that's also twitchy.
Makes sense. Zach, in terms of the playbook, I want to ask, how much of the playbook is under wraps on offense and defense by this point in the year? Or you've kind of shown everything. Well, I guess you probably haven't shown everything.
I mean, you get wrinkles now. I mean, when you play a team like Notre Dame, you have to have pretty much everything available. Now, everything that is applicable to what Notre Dame does. But, you know, if you go against Mike Leach, you're not going to show the defenses you have to go up against Arkansas, right? Arkansas is a power run team, like Wisconsin, Iowa. You're going to play different styles of defense against them than you would against Toledo, right? Never mind Toledo's talent gap issue, but you always have different attack plans for different styles of defense.
Zach, I want to move forward a little bit. I want to get to the next segment of, the hot seat. Last week, I gave you some coaches that, you know, the seat was warm, and I want you to tell me how hot it is. One being, nah, they're fine. Five being, they've already reached out to Urban Meyer. Okay, got it. So the first one on this. So Auburn had Penn State over the weekend. Brian Harsin, obviously you have your opinions on him. They lost to Penn State. How hot is Brian Harsin's seat right now?
It's a four. I mean, it's really hot. It's really hot. I mean, losing to Penn State the way he lost, just the state of the program. It's. I think everyone at Auburn right now is saying, "Oh God, what did we do? We brought in a Boise State lifer." Like I've said, I mean, I said it when they hired him. I was like, "What are you doing? This is going to end horrifically." And sure enough, we're watching it. It's going to end horrifically. So I think it's a four. He's not fired yet, but this might be the year when he gets. I mean, just look at the SEC West. Who's he going to beat? Auburn might beat.
So their next three games are against Missouri, LSU, Georgia. Then they are playing Ole Miss.
Right. So they should beat Missouri, but that's an SEC East team. They should absolutely finish last or second to last in the SEC West, because they're not going to beat Ole Miss. They're not going to beat Alabama. They're not going to beat Texas A&M. They're not going to beat Arkansas. Like, who are they going to beat? I get you. LSU and Mississippi State are the two that you would say, okay, they at least could win that game. I don't know that they would or will, but Auburn is an absolute train wreck. I think they are absolutely on the brink of getting fired.
And again, if you're Auburn, who do you go to? Now, I have already seen the Urban Meyer name get thrown around with that job, even though he hasn't been fired yet. So that would tell us that he will be fired here at some point. Additionally, I know that I've seen some stuff about they would love Deion Sanders. If Deion Sanders would be willing to come to the SEC, and bring that swag that way. So it's interesting. I don't know if Brian Harsin makes it out of the season, and I think four is pretty
accurate. World. What a world if Deion becomes the arch nemesis to Nick Saban in the Iron Bowl. I mean, you talk about made for TV. Think about the head coaches you would have in the SEC West then. Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher probably, right? Lane Kiffin, Mike Leach, Brian Kelly, and Deion Sanders. It would be, I mean, they should create a reality show for the SEC West if that happens.
Because
right now, Brian Harsin is the odd man out, right? Like, every other name is a character. I mean, it's a person that everyone knows. It's a national name. And then Brian Harsin, this fucking Boise State guy that banged his secretary. Like, I guess that's good for Netflix. But other than that, like, who is this guy? He's the odd man out. He doesn't belong. Like, which one of these is not like the other? It's Brian Harsin.
It's like the meme of those dragons. It's like two dragons are really detail oriented and like look angry. And the third one's got like the goofball look. And it's like, oh, geez.
Right. Which one of these don't belong?
All right. I want to go move to an offensive coordinator for a team that's been winning. And just ask you, just point blank, after you've watched plenty of Bama film, Bill O'Brien, how hot is his seat given the demands from a guy like Nick Saban?
Well, it can't be that hot, right? Because they're talking about he might be the next head coach at Nebraska. It's the most bizarre world we live in, right? Where guys are on the hot seat within their own program, but also on a short list for a big time college head coaching job. So, I think the pressure is on it. His seat is a one. It's not hot. But Nick Saban is absolutely displeased with the offensive performance. And I've said it before. I think he's mostly the hottest seat in Bama's building is Holloman Wiggins, is the receiver coach, because those receivers look awful. You watch Jermaine Burton jog routes, doesn't get his depth, doesn't block, doesn't do anything right. And it's, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. A kid won a national championship, was the leading receiver outside of Brock Bowers. He was the one, wide receiver one, beat Bama in the national championship game. After doing so, jumped in the portal because he wanted more touches, I guess, goes to Bama, and now we're watching this bullshit. Is like, could he turn it around? Absolutely. But it's indicative of the person he is. Like, he transferred from Bama as wide receiver one, or transferred from Georgia as wide receiver one after winning the national championship. Like, who does that? I've never heard of that. That's never happened in the history of college football. And so He scrubs his social media account of all pictures of Alabama. Like, is there an issue? Like, he got yelled at, and now he's a sensitive little bitch, and he wants to take all the pictures of Bama off his Instagram. Like, and I know people read too much into that, but where there's smoke, there's fire. There's a problem in that receiver room right now, culturally. And so the hottest seat at Bama is Holloman Wiggins, for sure.
Heard that. A name that I didn't think I'd be bringing up, things don't always go as planned. Our guy, Jeff Hafley, started 1-2 in the ACC. Coming up, they got Florida State, Louisville, and then Clemson, their next three-game stretch. Do you think his seat is a little bit hot, or is that?
It's not. No, his seat's not hot, but they could go 0-3 in those games. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Boston College is an incredibly hard place to win at. One, because of the recruiting base. You're all the way up in Massachusetts. There's been like one good player in the last 10 years come from that area. And when there is a great player, or a talented player like the Tariq Black kid, he goes to Michigan, right? He doesn't go to Boston College. So it's tough to recruit there. The academic standards are high. It is truly Notre Dame without the history, success, and financial backing. It's a tough place to win. I think Jeff Hafley's a really good football coach.
Really good.
But it's tough sledding.
Mm-hmm. Very tough sledding. Can I throw this up here before we continue? Our guy, you know, that's the one rule on the show.
Yes. King Broncos back. B. Ron Harsin was one stove man and nine. Yeah, no, he was ain'ted at it, y'all right. Non-football getting and bait ball rolling up hills till they ain't could hist no more. And added up breaks ATS Idaho. King Bronco in the building.
Sensational.
King Bronco still hasn't reached out to me. I've asked 100 times. He watches the show all the time. He comments. We put him on the screen without a super chat. Only listener and viewer that we do that to. King Bronco, shoot me a message on social media or my email, Zach@Menace2Sports. We want you on the show, man.
I got two more of coaches that on or off the hot seat. Jimbo Fisher, last week I believe you had him at a 4.5. Like,
he's still at a 4.5, but he'll never reach a 5 because they have to pay him such an ungodly amount of money to get him out. And Texas A&M, they can raise the money, but I think in their mind they would rather use that money for NIL and getting players, and that way they can load the roster. And if Jimbo's truly not the guy, if he doesn't turn it around in the next 2 years, they can fire him 2 years from now with a loaded roster, you know, and invest that money into their roster. They'll take 2 years of mediocrity to load the roster up and then get him out of town and bring somebody in who can actually coach this team, because Jimbo's had success really 1 year. I mean, he and the year he won a national championship, those were not his players. So Jimbo has never been a success. He's been a whiny bitch in the media and created this persona that he's a good coach, but the shit I'm watching, disgusting.
Their next three games, Arkansas, Mississippi State, Bama. Zach, they can't go out there and give them the good old you know, A&M Jimbo Fisher, 17 points, here you go. Because if they score 17 points against these three teams, Zach, they're going to lose. If he goes 0-3, do they just pony up the money for the buyout and say, get out of here?
Yeah, I mean, it's if he goes 0-3, there's going to be a lot of boosters calling the AD saying, hey, I'll donate. I'll donate to get him out of town. And it's going to take a lot of donations. So, I don't think that they can fire him this year. The buyout's too big. But if it turns into a disaster, like a four-win season, they're absolutely going to pull the plug. And they'll pay that money and regret every second of it, but they will do that.
I think December 5th is going to be really tricky for them. Because I think December 5th is going to – that's like the – that's the day that you find out how good your culture really is, Zach, because that's the first day that the transfer portal opens and there could be a floodgate of players there. You're going to learn a lot about A&M because if these boosters are paying, you know, $10 million to get a kid there, he gets seven of it up front, and then he's in the portal December 5th without hardly contributing this year. It's like, holy.
It's going to be a bad deal. And I don't believe that that's how the contracts are – designed. I know that there's rumors on how these kids are getting this money, but I don't believe that any booster would give a kid upfront money like that for, you know, knowing the chance
the risk of it, right? And I floated that out there more for just because things we've heard rumor mill wise.
But it doesn't matter any amounts of money if these freshmen, this freshman class, they paid all this money in NIL deals to get. If a handful of them hit the portal, the boosters are going to be like, "Hey, man, what the fuck? We just paid all this money for nothing."
Mm-hmm. All right, I got two more. One more. The man of the week, Josh Gattis. Man. How hot is his seat?
Well, first of all, I got a big fuck you to YouTube because they flagged our video of Josh Gattis, the film breakdown, as a copyright infringement. That is all 22 coaches' film. That is not anywhere. There's no copyright on that film. It's my film. I have it. It's no one has copyrighted that film, and YouTube flagged that video. And so I don't know how you can fight YouTube, but I'm seriously considering it if they don't take away this copyright infringement, because there's literally the only thing on that video is the all 22 film and me. So if anybody owns the copyright to that content, it's me. And YouTube in their fucking North Korea operation thinks they can flag it. Why? Because Miami reached out and said, hey, this guy's using our footage. Fuck you. That's Texas A&M's footage. Right, it's Miami doesn't own that footage. It's not copyrighted. I'm so furious about it. So I responded. We'll see what they say. But if this all 22 film is not able to be utilized, I'm contacting an attorney because I'm going to sue YouTube. That's complete and utter bullshit, and it's illegal what they're doing. So, anyways, what was your question? I had to get that off my chest.
Just how hot Josh Gattis' seat is. But I want to add to your really point hot. Real quick. Yeah. Just real quick. It's interesting because previously you and I have done a lot of work on YouTube. When things get flagged, it's usually in the first 48 hours of us posting it. This was after it hit 10,000 views, then the flag came in.
Yeah.
And because, we know whose desk it went across. Absolutely. And then it's flagged immediately.
And you know what? I'm just telling you, a note to Miami football. If you think that contacting YouTube is going to stop me from exposing your coordinator, I promise you, I will do a Josh Gattis breakdown every week and not monetize it. So fuck your copyright. I will show the world what your coordinator is because that's the problem, right? I put out that video and showed everyone Josh Gattis's offense, and it went, I mean, Miami fans were in every Miami space. They're pinning it at the top. Florida fans, Florida State fans, like everyone is throwing it in the face of Miami fans, and Miami fans are agreeing Josh Gattis is ass. Michigan fans are telling Miami fans, we told you so. I won't stop putting out reality and truth. So Miami, you're on the list. Texas was on the list once. You see what happened there. They sent me a cease and desist. Tom Herman was angry about the hook 'em horns down shirt that I made and sold. And guess what? Nothing happened to me. Tommy boy got fired. So Josh Gattis has got a five on the hot seat, and I'm gonna keep turning the heat up as much as I can, unless he turns it around. I have no ill will against Josh Gattis, but unless he puts something on the field that's good, like I'm just talking about college football, trying to give a glimpse into the reality of what is actually going on, and what is going on at Miami is he's an epic failure already.
Facts. The receivers aren't coached well. You proved it, and we got hit with something way later than what the algorithm would pick up. Zach is hot. His hot seat's what, like a 4.8, you think? You think that's where he's at right now, or is it cooler than that?
I think it's a five. I think it's absolutely it's a five.
Call the dogs. One more bonus one. We got Mr. Do Your Fucking Job. How hot is Tommy Reese's seat? Is he in the clear now? They beat Cal?
It's not a hot seat. I think Tommy Reese is the one on the hot seat.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Tommy Reese.
Yeah, Tommy Reese is the one on the hot seat. I think he's done after the year. And I think that this needed to happen for Marcus Freeman because Notre Dame was so adamant that he had to keep Tommy Reese. And now Tommy Reese's offense is the reason they're so putrid. And I think that at the end of the year, Notre Dame administration is going to look at Marcus Freeman and say, sorry, we shouldn't have done that. We shouldn't have forced that on you. You have the full control. Here's the keys. You are now officially the head coach. Make whatever changes you need. And if Marcus Freeman wants to be a great head coach, he's going to fire Tommy Reese.
These next 2 weeks are going to be tricky for them. North Carolina is going to put up a lot of points, Zach. They score. And then BYU is a good football team. Those are the next 2 weeks for Notre Dame. And now, you know, there's some buy-in issue because what is their team playing for? The issue is when you don't play in a conference and you lose those two games early, what are you playing for?
Yeah, that's it, right? What are you playing for? You don't have a conference. What are you doing?
Mm-hmm. You're playing for a burger and a bag of chips is what you're playing
Honestly,
for.
Honestly, you're hoping to go to the mayonnaise bowl so you can get some free Hellman's mayonnaise. I don't know. What is Notre Dame playing for right now? The rest of the year, what are they playing for?
Hey, what was that? Shane Beamer dumping the mayonnaise on himself? Right.
Man, you want to talk about the most epic thing ever. If Notre Dame ends up going to the Mayo Bowl and Marcus Freeman gets mayo poured on him, you talk about, I mean, that's when I lost all respect for Shane Beamer. So anyone that said jump off Shane Beamer, he's doing a good job. Like, no. This man let them pour mayonnaise on him. You can kiss my ass. I don't give a fuck what he is, what you think he is. That is a homemade bitch right there. You'll never pour mayonnaise on me ever. No matter how much super chats, no matter how many subscribers, no one's ever poured mayonnaise on me, especially if I'm a millionaire and the head coach of South Carolina. Just absurd.
I mean, I have a price. If that number gets high enough, I'll dump mayonnaise on myself. It doesn't matter. Hey,
different folks, different strokes, right? Yeah, you're also sexually attracted to Lola Bunny. Okay, so here we are.
No, I'm not. Anyway, I want to hit a couple of super chats before we move on, Zach. I'm taking my old man to his first game versus Wisconsin. I'm hyped, hoping we just walk all over them. That's going to be a hell of a game. Three night games in the first four games of the year.
Man, you talk about a hype stadium. I mean, people are going to leave this game Saturday saying this is the best stadium in the country because of the three night games. Yeah, we'll break down Ohio State Wisconsin on Friday, but I absolutely agree. I mean, there's going to be certain things that you're going to see, like I mentioned, where you're going to get to see Ohio State, how they run the ball against the best front seven that they faced. You're going to get to see the defense against an extremely talented back, probably the second. He's in the conversation, right, with the running back at Penn State and then the running backs at Ohio State and then this kid, Braylon Allen, at Wisconsin. He's in the conversation for the best back in the Big Ten. So you're going to get to see the defense kind of attack that. And it's going to be you're going to learn something, but I think Ohio State absolutely wins pretty handedly.
And this will be the first time that Jim Knowles faces that kind of offense. And obviously, you'll touch more on it tomorrow. I am excited. What do you think about the blackouts? Do you like the blackouts or is it?
I love it.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Thank you, Andrew, for the five. If you guys can find it, watch Harry Miller's speech on mental health, given what you are going through. Yeah, I watched it.
Mm-hmm. I've watched really it, and it's great stuff to put on the show because everyone should watch it. I've been into this from the times that we had the advertiser, BetterHelp.com, who's no longer advertises with us, but I'll mention it again because I had multiple subscribers reach out and say, wow, it was a difference maker in my life. It's BetterHelp.com. It's not an advertiser on the show. This is not a paid promotion, but it's phenomenal. It is an online like mental health space where you can find therapists, do Zoom meetings. It takes the pressure off, whereas making an appointment with a therapist and driving there and meeting with them, I mean, there's a lot of pressure in that. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of struggles mentally with doing that. But BetterHelp.com, a lot of my subscribers, a lot of our listeners have used it and told, like, shot me a message, said, man, I don't want to say you saved my life, but you impacted it just by having them on. So that's an option if you have, you know, if you're struggling, even if you're not struggling, just get your mental space right.
I second that, and I third that if I could. Connor Baker, thank you for the two. Why did Auburn fire Malzahn? That's an interesting one. Do you think they regret firing him, or it's his time to go?
You know, these people get unrealistic expectations, and they fire coaches sometimes for no reason, right? Nebraska did it with Frank Solich. Minnesota did it with Glenn Mason. I mean, they achieve a level of success, and then when they aren't able to maintain it, they fire people. I mean, Eddie Orgeron's a great example, right? He won a national championship. The next year, they had an awful year, and they fired him. And you're like, what are you – like, your expectation was to have the 2019 Joe Burrow LSU team every year? And I'm not saying Eddie O shouldn't have been fired, but now you got Brian Kelly, and you lost to Florida State. And what are we doing?
No, exactly. I'm a believer in longer leashes, but I know with the transfer portal era and the NIL era, you're not going to get too many long leashes. Saban spoiled a lot of this for people because people expect to be the next Bama or the Bama challenger. When in reality, that is such a difficult process to get to. Like, that is very hard to do. And people don't realize it. But again, sometimes it works out because you get the cases where, you know, obviously Georgia moves on and they go get Kirby Smart and they, you know, give it time and Kirby ends up doing really well. So it is tough. And I think it's a reminder that it's tough being elite. Like, it's hard to be elite. It doesn't happen very often. You don't get to lose a coach and get better a lot of
that's
time.
That's why you have so much respect for Nick Saban and what he's built, because he's able to consistently do it year in, year out. And you look at places like Clemson, who's in a little bit of a lull, and they may bounce up. I've been a Clemson hater, I've been told lately, but they may bounce back. Dabo may get the ship righted, but it's really hard to do this, have that level of success long term, like consistently year in, year out.
You know, it's so hard. And that's kind of what I say when I kind of caution Penn State fans, even though, you know, obviously, like, I have my fair criticism of James Franklin, but the grass isn't always greener if you don't have an elite guy lined up.
No doubt.
That's kind of a case of that. A little coach's talk. Lil Fleazy, thank you for the two. King Bronco is Jim Harbaugh.
Yes, he is.
Is that another King Bronco super chat? Oh, not King Bronco, but about King Bronco. King Bronco, what did you say? Salute to you all.
We never know.
Yeah, we do not know, man. It's actually it's unbelievable because, like, the first couple times, like, I thought legitimately, like, I was, like, tripping on air, Zach, because I tried to read a King Bronco super chat. I had no clue what's going on. Josh Gattis dropped a dime. Did you hear what Josh Gattis had to say about the quarterback play?
No.
So I almost included this in the – we're doing a coach's speak a little bit later, but I thought you would find this really interesting. I went to look for the clip and couldn't find it again. But he basically said – so they had 7 drops on Saturday. By the coach's count, they had 4 by PFF's count. And what Gattis had to say was those 7 drops all should not be attributed to the receivers because the ball placement – even though it hit their hands, the ball placement wasn't as great as he would like
Jesus
it to be.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, he's got to go. He's got to be fired. Never once in my life, in my entire career. He's a receiver coach, mind you. He coaches the receivers. So he deflected the blame on his players to the quarterback. When the quarterback didn't play poorly, his offensive scheme and his players played poorly. I mean, that's been exposed. I put out the film. You can go watch it and decide for yourself. But that is embarrassing. Mm-hmm. Every time a ball was within a catch radius of any receiver I ever had and they didn't catch the ball, it was a drop and they got coached hard through it. Because your job, the quarterback has a lot going on. The receiver's not, it's not that hard. If the ball is catchable, you have to catch the ball. Great players do. Michael Thomas had one drop, I think, in his entire career. And I remember it vividly, as does he. I mean, he was livid. You are literally giving your players excuses talking about ball placement. Fuck ball placement. Wherever that ball's thrown, if it's catchable, catch the fucking ball. It's not that difficult. What the quarterback's doing is difficult. You catching a ball that's a little bit behind you is not that difficult, especially if you train it and work it and coach it and develop it. I mean, does he not work bad ball? Like, I would do drills and schedule and plan. All right, this 5 minute we're doing this drill, it's going to be a bad ball drill where I'm throwing balls low and behind every receiver, the whole drill. To work on catching balls that aren't perfectly placed. How easy is it to catch a ball that's perfectly placed? It's very easy. Great players catch the hard ball. That's you have to fire him if he said that.
I'll find the clip and send it to you after the
show. That's atrocious. I mean, that's atrocious.
No, I'll grab that for you. In my part, you know, I'm kind of football literate, but my take on kind of that comment, I hate that comment being used as a reason a guy didn't catch a ball. I can almost understand it if it's about yards after catch. If that makes sense. Like, in terms of, like, if there's an issue with
totally different. Like,
okay. Yeah.
Okay, a low ball, mm-hmm. an underthrown ball. You have to slow down. You catch tackle. That's understood. Or if they break it up, the DB swats it away because it's a bad ball. That's on the quarterback. But if it's a catchable ball that is behind you, you catch it. Or anywhere. Exactly. If it's not a perfectly thrown ball, you catch it.
Which is why they give drops to receivers and not to quarterbacks.
If
that makes sense. But again, it's Josh Gattis, one of the elite of the elites, according to some people I talked to. Would Herbs take the job at Texas A&M if it opened up? That's an interesting spot for Herbs, I would think, because there's going to be so much booster.
I think that's right now, if you ask me, if you told me he's definitely taking a job in the next 3 years, 100% the favorite job, the Vegas favorites would be Texas A&M. Absolutely. With how they've recruited, the the support, how big of a program it is, the alumni base, the boosters, the amount of money they have. Absolutely, Texas A&M would be the odds-on favorite to land Urban Meyer.
Heard. Talking about the YouTube strike issue, YouTube, Zach, it isn't just you. When other YouTube videos hit 10K or trending, they tend to get dinged. You got to submit an appeal.
Hopefully. I submitted the appeal, and I promise you, if it doesn't get overturned, we're gonna have a problem. But here's my problem. We've had several videos go over 10,000 views. Several. I mean, literally probably 30. And
we did Bryce Young the other day when Bryce Young on this show.
Right. And they've never been dinged unless there's good reason, right? It's a TV copy of ESPN film. Okay, I get it. That even though that's covered under fair use, like, okay, can't use ESPN film. Got it. This video, there's nothing on the video that is copyrighted by anyone. So we'll see what happens. I don't want to talk about it all show, but I'm livid.
Yeah, no, as you should be. The Pessimistic Buckeye, thank you for the five. New Menace General here. What up, Zach and Chris? Love the film breakdown. My guy!
Hey, I appreciate you, man. I appreciate you supporting the cause. I hope the degeneracy in the Menace General chat doesn't drive you away, because if you're looking for college football content, insider information, a great time, and absolute degeneracy, become a general tier subscriber on our Patreon, because it is, I mean, Sarah Blake's in the chats. There's nudes. There's any type of degeneracy you could want, other than, I haven't seen drugs. So thank God I'm not a drug guy, but I haven't seen people talk about drugs. But other than drugs, it's a fucking degenerate world. And it's highly entertaining.
And there's recruiting nuggets in there when you sift through the degeneracy.
Yes.
Our guy number 12, thank you for the two. Zach, I want to move on to the next segment. This week's contender or pretender. Obviously, the new polls came out, and I want to get your take on some teams that are, you know, ranked higher than others, and ask you if you think they can contend for something, or if they are just kind of floating up there, like A&M was as a pretender, who you did call last week.
Let's do it.
So this week, Kentucky is in the top eight now, coming in at number eight, ahead of schools like Oklahoma State, Arkansas, Tennessee, and NC State, and Penn State. Is Kentucky a contender?
No, they're a pretender. Tennessee will beat Kentucky, and on top of that, Penn State would beat Kentucky by 14 points. Kentucky is an absolute pretender. I've said it since the beginning of time. Will Levis is not what people are cracking him up to be. This Kentucky team is absolutely a pretender.
That's fair. Arkansas, then, I want to ask about them. They're ranked at number 10. They held places as where they were last week. They're the same in the coaches poll and the AP poll. They're ahead of those same schools, Penn State, Ole Miss, Baylor, Washington, Florida, at number 10 in the country. Are they a legit top 10 team, or just kind of a fluff based on the early schedule?
Fluff based on the early schedule. So the jury's still out on them. I'm not ready to call them a pretender or a contender, because they haven't played anyone worth a shit. I want to see them play someone first.
And that's fair. I'm looking at their schedule now. I know they did open up with Cincy, and that was a big win. This weekend, they of course have A&M, and I think
that's what we're going to find out. I mean, they beat a good Cincinnati team. I think I'm just a little hesitant to call them a contender. I think they have the real deal at quarterback. I think that KJ Jefferson is that guy. I think that if they beat A&M like they should, they'll immediately be a contender. So I think they will be a contender. I'm just not ready to call them that yet, because I want to see them play someone. And I guess then you get into the conversation, is A&M really someone versus Cincinnati? But it was a big win against Cincinnati. I still have this. I still don't believe Cincinnati is what they were last year, right? I know they weren't. They were in a dogfight with Miami of Ohio this past weekend. So I think they beat a decent Cincinnati team, but it's not the Cincinnati team that went to the playoffs. I mean, they lost Sauce Gardner. They lost Kobe Bryant. They lost their quarterback, Devin Ridder. They've lost everything. So I think Cincinnati's a decent team, but I don't think they are a Power Five contending team like they were last year. So the jury's still out on Arkansas, but if I had to predict, I would say they're absolutely a contender. I think they beat A&M, and they're probably the odds on favorite to beat Bama over anyone else. Not the odds on favorite to actually win, but they are the biggest test for Bama on the schedule prior to Georgia and the SEC championship game, assuming they make it there.
It is interesting, Zach, because they have the win over Cincinnati, who I think's decent, and a legit win, quote-unquote legit, Spencer Rattler in South Carolina. And then they caught themselves in a little bit of a dogfight when they didn't really play well against Missouri State. But I think a lot of that has to do with, I think they kind of got caught thinking they would just roll over this team. They're not quite at that level yet. The next team I want to talk about, NC State, undefeated. They're number 12 in the country. They're ahead of Penn State, Ole Miss. They're ahead of Texas. Are they a pretender or a contender? They're in the ACC.
I, I think they're absolutely a contender in the ACC, and we not different from other shows, but we talked about NC State a lot in preseason because they have so much production returning, a veteran team. I really believe in their coaching staff. I think NC State has a chance to make some noise in the ACC with Clemson being down. Miami, has Josh Gattis, so that's always going to be their kind of Achilles heel. So I think NC State has a chance to really be a contender. I don't know if they're going to be a national contender, but an ACC contender 100%.
It's really weird because they feel really steady, and they're obviously a veteran group. They're coming off a 1-point win not coming off. That was their first game of the year against East Carolina. Coming up next, they should move to 4-0 because they play UConn, who obviously is not very good. That'll be a good measuring stick. Like, who beats UConn worse, Michigan or NC State, in terms of like contender pretender for next week? All right, Zach, at number what are they at right now? Actually, I lost them. Ole Miss, are they contender or pretender?
Pretender. I don't even need to qualify that statement. I think they are they're worse than Bama, worse than Arkansas.
They're ranked 16th now, right behind Baylor.
They're the third best team in the SEC West.
Okay.
So they're a pretender. They're not going to contend for the division title. So they're certainly not a contender for anything.
And then last but not least, I want to put this out there just because I think they're ranked 14th, and I want to ask you, should Penn State be a top 10 team going into this week?
They got to prove. I mean, they still have more to prove. I mean, everyone has this notion that Penn State is Penn State, right? That we watched them last year, awful. The year before that, the COVID year, fucking atrocious. So they need, and the real problem here is those bad years, and I know Sean Clifford got hurt last year, but Sean Clifford is still the guy leading the charge. And I'm not saying he didn't flip it. We broke down their game against Auburn, but they still have to prove to the world that they are a different Penn State. And I think they look different. I do believe they are different. I don't think they are going to beat Michigan or Ohio State, but they look different than they have in years past. So I think they will be, they'll give Michigan and Ohio State a tough game, but they're still not quite there yet. They're not quite on Michigan's level or Ohio State's level. And so I got to call them a pretender, but I think the improvement is real. Like I think they're a much better football team, but they're still not quite a contender yet.
Got you. I do have Penn State as a contender currently. I really like the kind of the direction I'm projecting a little bit as well, but it's going to be nice to see them kind of notch that second big time victory.
Yeah, I think a year from now, they could be a contender. I mean, they got some youth, they got some talent, Sean Clifford out the door, Drew Aller in. I think that next year they might be a contender, but this year it's a year early. They're a pretender. Yeah.
Heard. Our guy Brady, thank you for the five. What's the over under amount of chromosome screen Bronco has? Oh, Zach, you're not answering that.
I'm not. I wasn't going to, Chris, but thank you for saving me.
Yeah, the PR guy. Our guy David Johnson, thank you for the five. Hey guys, you think App State is on track to be a team that makes the playoffs in the next 4 years?
Well, in 4 years, we might have a 12-team playoff, track.
We're going to have a 12-team
for sure. But I mean, those you look at Cincinnati right now, right? Those non-Power 5 teams, they usually build when they are in the conversation, they build to it with one team, and then when those kids leave, they get knocked back down to reality because they don't have the depth and the consistency of recruiting and developing great players. They honestly do a great job recruiting. They identify some diamonds in the rough and they become great players. Sauce Gardner, we just mentioned some. Kobe Bryant, right? He won the fucking Thorpe Award, right? We're very under-recruited. So Cincinnati has come back down to reality, which is a really good football team, but not going to contend and beat Notre Dame. Well, they might beat Notre Dame, but not going to contend with a national landscape. So App State might be able to, and they certainly could sneak into a 12-team playoff. But to be in the conversation nationally is going to be tough for them because of the consistency needed at finding great players at diamonds in the rough. It's really hard to do. And when you do it, three, four times in one class, it's almost a miracle. So to do that consistently is highly unlikely.
Very tough to do. Oh, our dude Chris. Oh, thank you for the two. Would you rather?
So this is to me. Would I rather Chris tap Lola or Honey Boo Boo? I don't know who Honey Boo Boo is. Who is that?
I thought it was a kid. So I.
Oh no, not the kid from like the dance show, is it?
That's the only Honey Boo Boo I know.
Oh, I would much rather him tap Lola Bunny. Christ, don't do that. That's disgusting. Chris, he's in the degenerate chat, so there you go.
I am celibate. I'll have you know. Thank you for the two. But I'm telling you, you up that to $5 in the Patreon. There's a lot more more access. This is a question from Sean Cup. We get this a lot. Why are you so low on
Shane Cup.
My bad, Cup. Why are you so low on McCord next year for Ohio State? I'll let you go first.
I'm not low on him. I just haven't seen, like, when C.J. Stroud's of the world, when they come in the game as a freshman, right? He was backing up Justin Fields. When he went in the game, you saw sparks where you said, holy shit, this kid's probably going to be really good. I have not seen that from Kyle McCord. That's not to say he won't be, but in times he's winning the games, he doesn't impress me. With his throws don't impress me. His management doesn't impress me. And it could just be that he hasn't taken the reins yet, and he might be a phenomenal player. I'm not saying he isn't. I'm saying he hasn't shown it, and it's a very different statement. I've never said Kyle McCord isn't any good. I've said Kyle McCord hasn't shown us that he's any good. That's a different statement. And so I haven't seen anything that makes me believe Kyle McCord is a national championship caliber quarterback. He might be, but as of now, I haven't seen it. That's all I can say. I have not.
Well, if it's you froze there for a sec, Zach, but welcome back.
Did I?
Yeah. Just for a quick sec. For me, Zach, like the biggest trait I look for is like ball placement and information processing. I think Kyle McCord processes information at a high clip. I don't think his ball placement is as elite as guys we've seen in the past. And as Ohio State fans, we are spoiled and used to that level of eliteness. Our guy, thank you for the two. I play Tennessee money line. Should I be worried? I don't know what money line is. No.
No. You absolutely should not be worried. Tennessee is going to win that football game. I think they win by 14.
Mm-hmm. Last one, then I want to get to the coaches speak. Josh Gattis is an enemy of Menace Army. is Columbus Gold out? Let's go. Let's go. Enemy of the Army.
I'm shout out Columbus Gold, the best strip club in Columbus. It's still not very good, but.
Jeez. Oh, and here's just our guy, Cody. Love the show. Chat, nugs, breakdowns, all worth
it. Cody is a general tier subscriber. He's in our group chat. He's the number one degenerate. I've mentioned him before. And so there you go. That's testimony. It's worth every penny. I'm telling you, go sign up. Simple. Go sign up. I've already gave a money back guarantee. If you don't like it, send me a message. Cancel your subscription. I will send you your money back. I believe in what we're doing and I believe in the value. So I don't need $30 and you realize, oh, it sucks. And then you're out $30. If you think it sucks, I'll send it back. I don't need it. We're just trying to grow the brand. So go sign up right now. If you don't like it, message me back. I'll shoot you your money right back.
All right, Zach, I got your favorite segment of the week. Coaches speak. Obviously, Jim Knowles and Ryan Day had some things to say. Before we move on to our guy, Ryan. First up, he was talking about Denzel Burke. Denzel's serious about his craft. Life on an island is difficult, particularly at Ohio State. Knowles went on to say, we have 100% confidence in him.
Say it again, one more time.
Okay, Jim Knowles was talking about Denzel Burke. He said, Denzel is serious about his craft, but life on an island is difficult, particularly at Ohio State. Knowles went on to then say, we have 100% confidence in him.
Well, I will tell you this. What he's saying is he's telling you the truth. And I did the defensive breakdown. It released yesterday. First three games at Ohio State, I broke down every relevant clip. It was like, I think, over an hour of a coach's meeting film breakdown. And in that film, you see several plays where Denzel Burke looks outstanding. He just needs to get better at the line of scrimmage. He's gotten cooked a handful of times on a release because he's overly aggressive and he shoots his hand when he shouldn't. That is coachable. That is fixable. He is absolutely talented. He's made some good plays this year. He should be fine. I'm not going to say will be fine because he's got to get better. But they've seen him in practice, thousands of reps, right? We've seen him on film for maybe, 150. He'll be okay, I think. I think he can develop and get past his fundamental issues. But on that breakdown on Patreon, he made some great plays. He covered guys. Like, it wasn't like he's an absolute liability. He just has a little bit of an issue at the line of scrimmage. So I think they have all utmost confidence, and they have to, because after watching that film, they don't have another corner that can take a spot. He's by far the best option, so they got to coach him through it.
I think it was interesting referencing life on an island is difficult. I think that was really
what caught my eye. It is. It's hard as shit. It's one of the hardest things in the world in football to do is play press man coverage. That's very hard to do. I mean, we watched Bradley Roby, who's still starting in the NFL, get cooked for an entire game by Jared Abadaris. And I don't know, he's not in the NFL. I don't know where the fuck he went. He was a great college player, but we watched him get cooked for an entire game, right? And he was a much better player than anyone Denzel Burke has covered, but Bradley Roby is still, I mean, he's an NFL corner. He's going to have a long career. Like, he's still a great player. It happens when you play press man.
Next little quote, Jim Knowles are talking about defending Braylon Allen. He's different. He's big, strong back in the big back category. He's as good as any I've seen.
He absolutely is. I agree. I mean, I think he's one of the top 10 running backs in the country. And I think the Big Ten has four of the top 10, but between the kid at Penn State, Braylon Allen, Mayan Williams, Travion Henderson, I think they're four of the top 10 running backs in the country right now. So he is absolutely as advertised. But here's the moral of the story. A running back can't beat you. Melvin Gordon was fucking ridiculous. Heisman Trophy candidate in New York City didn't do shit against Ohio State because of the defense's performance and game plan. So Braylon Allen is a fantastic player. But it's, I mean, you just got to bottle him up. And what the fuck else are they going to do?
Our guy Jim Knowles. Matter
of fact, hold on. Here's even further to the point. I think the Big Ten has five of the top 10 backs because Mo Ibrahim is back at Minnesota.
He is.
And you imagine that. One conference has half of the top 10 backs in the country. I would challenge you to list me 10 running backs, the top 10 running backs in college football without including those five.
Huh. I'm not going to argue with you. I think it's pretty spot on. Okay. Noted and noted. Jim Knowles was when asked about Toledo quarterback Daquan Finn, we didn't execute very well. And then went on to say the silver bullet caliber wasn't there.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're all salty about the fact that one of the most athletic quarterbacks in the country made Ohio State look silly. And that was honestly my favorite part. I know people want to learn football. My favorite part about my Patreon film breakdown was watching that kid. Holy shit, is he talented. I told you, he's not going to be the quarterback at Toledo. But Jim Knowles is basically saying, I'm embarrassed that quarterback broke us off so many times, and I hope that doesn't happen again.
Yeah. The kid, and he was talking about it. He said it's virtually impossible to simulate that in practice. Like, we didn't have anything for it.
Of course not. Who could simulate that?
I don't know. What do you do? Do you put like a DB back there, quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, you got to just find a great athlete. I mean, That's where Tate Martell actually had value. He was a great athlete as a scout team quarterback. That was his ceiling. That was his pinnacle.
Now, Ryan Day, he got a lot of talk with the tight ends this week. A lot of talk about the tight ends this week, given the fact that Kate Dover was playing.
Recruiting.
And G. Scott Jr. kind of, you know, slipped somebody and ended up kind of getting held. And then also, like, Jelani Thurman is out there taking more visits as a tight end commit. Day on G. Scott, he said G. Scott didn't think his career would go like this when he came to Ohio State, but he has a chance to be a really good football player because he just keeps putting one foot in front of the other. Day went on to say he's going to be an asset for us on offense.
Absolutely. He's going to be more and more involved as the season goes on. And basically what he's saying is 90% of kids in college football today are soft as shit and would have transferred. This kid is the story of a kid that transfers, but he didn't. He said, fuck it, I'm going to put my nose down and just grind and work to become a great player. That speaks to his character. That speaks to his father. His father, he's been on the show. You can tell he instills that in his kids. That kid didn't give a shit about, he didn't give a shit about nothing except reality and doing what he has to do. So he's one of my favorite players on the team because of that, because he was a highly recruited kid, came in as a receiver. They moved to the tight end. He hasn't really played much. He is the epitome, the best example of someone that normally would transfer. But instead, he said, fuck that. I'm going to work. I'm just going to grind. I'm going to become a great player here because that was my goal, and I'm going to do it. So one of my favorite players on the team, and he absolutely will. He'll reap the fruits of that labor.
Day went on to say that Cade Stover, G. Scott, and Mitch Rossi all graded out as champions against Toledo. Does that equal more playing time grading out as a champion, or is that more?
No, if you didn't grade out against Toledo, you might not play the rest of the year. It's Toledo.
Okay.
Good for them. I mean, they did a good job. It's like I watched this defensive line performance on the film breakdown that we did, and it's like, holy shit, man. Their offensive line was so bad. But our defensive line looked like world beaters. But they're supposed to, right?
Mm-hmm. Day was asked about Cade Stover and the position change. He said, Cade's heart was on defense, but he realized his ceiling is at tight end.
Well, I mean, I think we're seeing that, right? He's showing that he is a really good tight end. I mean, he's not in the likes of the Georgia tight ends or, but I mean, he's showing that he has a lot of value and a pretty high ceiling at tight end.
No, he's definitely a good tight end. Ryan Day was asked about the three night games to start off the season. He said, it's been great for recruiting. I do like when noon games are over at about 4 or 4:30 and you can go home and enjoy the rest of the day.
I mean, there's nothing better, right? There's nothing better than that. But the night games are great for an electric atmosphere for recruiting. The noon games are great for you as a father, as a football coach, and the players to get some time off and go hang out with the student body. You know, there's value in both, but I just, you want both, right? Mm-hmm. You have to have those night games, one for the electric atmosphere. It's fun and recruiting. Those kids come, they see the environment. It's second to none. But at the same time, if you played every game at night, you would literally never see your kids ever.
And then we got a bonus one from CJ Stroud. I don't have a baby. Thank God.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you did have a baby, it'd be a blessing, but sure. It's bizarre. Who asked him that question?
No, he was talking about a play, and it's just the way the combo went. Thank you, Scott, for the five. Can this go to? So I have this, but I broke it, so I got to fix the leg before I set it back up. So I am a little darker today.
Yeah, we got to work on Chris's video aesthetic if we ever want the show to grow, because it's bad.
Well, here's the thing: the brighter I am, the more people are going to call me ugly. So
We just want it to look professional, Chris. We want it to look like we're actually not just some fucking podcast in a closet somewhere.
Even though I am in a closet in my mom's basement.
No, you're not.
All right. Oracle. Oh, if the defense has 60 plays this week, how many times does Knowles all out blitz and go cover zero against Wisconsin over under 49.5?
He's already done it more than I expected him to. And I don't want to keep talking about it because I feel like a salesman. But in the Patreon video, I'm going to say it 50 times. On film, how about that? I won't even talk about the video. On film, he played zero a lot. And even sometimes it was zero with blitz. Sometimes it was zero without a blitz. He had some whole player help low, but it is a run-stopping defense, and he has no problem putting his DBs on an island and playing zero. And I would think that with Wisconsin's inability at skill, you're going to see zero quite a bit on Saturday, like a lot. And so just to tease or to give you some of the info, zero, they might press a single receiver, but when you see all the DBs, I call it birds on a fence, they're all lined up at like 8 yards, 9 yards off at the same level. That is a zero look. Now, what Jim Knowles does that is outstanding is he gives that look a lot and then plays cover two, plays cover three. Like it's very, very well thought out, well orchestrated defense. And on film, I did the breakdown. There's so many things that he does. Like, this is a package. Here's the look. When Jim Knowles builds his defense, he said, all right, here's the look. What all are we going to do out of this look to be multiple, sound, and they won't know what's coming? And he does one of the best jobs I've seen, where you see where there's a clip, there's a defense that they run where both D tackles are wide outside the guards, right? And Tommy Eichenberg and Steel Chambers walk up in the A gaps. They'll play cover three, cover two, and they'll blitz both of them. All out of the same look. And it's hard for the offensive line because they walk up there and they're like, ah, shit, we have to account for them because they have blitzed them. But if we do, someone's free and they could drop. So it's very, very well thought out. The whole film breakdown is on Patreon. Plug it one more time. It's outstanding.
That's for the football nerds out there. Zach, I got nothing else left for today. You got anything else you want to hit before we get out of here?
I don't. I appreciate everybody. We'll be back tomorrow at noon to preview this weekend's games and Friday. That's it, Chris. Appreciate you. Menace out.